I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me. Thanks for tuning in. So, in the cab, we have a book club, and we've been reading from A Knock at Midnight. That's inspiration from the great sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., edited by Claiborne Carson and Peter Holleran. And we've approached the final sermon in that collection, and it's called Remaining Awake Through a Great Revolution. And as the title would suggest, seems very relevant for today, right? Has a revolution ever stopped? I don't think so. I mean, life is a wheel. It turns and turns. There's all spiritual, big wheel, little wheel, spin and spin. And when something spins, what does it do, class? Makes a revolution. And we continue down this road toward liberation. It's an eternal road. You know, it goes on and on and on. And we as souls travel it on and on. All right. So the introduction in this sermon was written by Desmond Tutu, Bishop Desmond Tutu, along with King, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, for his timeless efforts to end apartheid in South Africa. I'm not going to read from the introduction. I just want to give a moment of airtime to Bishop Desmond Tutu. He's done a lot of work against apartheid and genocide. All right. After thanking the congregation and acknowledging how happy he was to be there to deliver this sermon, Remaining Awake Through a Great Revolution, which was delivered at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. on the 31st of March, 1968. Leading up to this, I had said that it was very close to the date of his assassination, which was April 4th. So it's just about 5 days before. King says, I would like to use as a subject from which to preach this morning, Remaining Awake Through a Great Revolution. The text for the morning is found in the book of Revelation. There are two passages there that I would like to quote in the 16th chapter of that book. Behold, I make all things new. Former things are passed away. I'm sure that most of you have read that arresting little story from the pen of Washington Irving entitled Rip Van Winkle. The one thing that we usually remember about the story is that Rip Van Winkle slept 20 years, but there is another point in that little story that is almost completely overlooked. It was the sign in the end from which Rip went up in the mountain for his long sleep. When Rip Van Winkle went up into the mountains, the sign had a picture of King George III of England. When he came down 20 years later, the sign had a picture of George Washington, the first president of the United States. When Rip Van Winkle looked up at the picture of George Washington, and looking at the picture, he was amazed. He was completely lost. He knew not who he was. And this reveals to us that the most striking thing about the story of Rip Van Winkle is not merely that Rip slept 20 years, but that he slept through a revolution. While he was peacefully snoring up in the mountain, a revolution was taking place that at points would change the course of history, and Rip knew nothing about it. He was asleep, yet he slept through a revolution. And one of the great liabilities of life is that all too many people find themselves living amid a great period of social change, and yet they fail to develop the new attitudes, the new mental responses that the new situation demands. They end up sleeping through a revolution. All right? So I'm going to pause there. Those are the words of the great Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So let's talk a little bit about why people are offended at the word woke. It's just a question out here that I ask you to pose to yourself. If you have a problem with the word woke, if you have a problem with people being awakened to truths, for people opening their eyes to the changes that are going on around them, I beg you to ask yourself why. If you want to put the vehicle in reverse and go backwards to a time 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, almost 60 years ago when this sermon was written, or 130 years ago, why? Why would you put a forward revolution into reverse? Why would you be angry and afraid of people who are awake during great periods of upheaval when people are dying? Not just dying, but being killed. I mean, I want to be clear about that, you know. A lot of the pain that's happening now, it could be prevented. But many people are very busy wanting to put the brakes on forward momentum and take us back to a time. And I also speak to my forward-thinking Imagineers here, those who are identified as moving forward, yet we constantly reach to the past to say, well, we used to do it this way. Societies used to be built this way, in a good sense. You know, we imagine villages and communities and matriarchies and all these structures that we imagine were better than what we have now. And I also challenge us, as we learn from our past, we must take that information and imagine, or dream, if you will, a future. Nothing is perfect. Nothing is meant to last forever. We can design a better world. All right, we're going to continue with the book. Dr. King has talked a lot in his sermons about the triple revolution, what he calls a triple revolution, and that's the technological revolution, the revolution in weaponry, and the human rights revolution. There can be no gainsaying of the fact that a great revolution is taking place in the world today. In a sense, it is a triple revolution. That is, a technological revolution with the impact of automation and cybernation. Then there is a revolution in weaponry with the emergence of atomic and nuclear weapons of warfare. Then there is a human rights revolution with the freedom explosion that is taking place all over the world. Yes, we do live in a period where changes are taking place, and there is still the voice crying through the vista of time saying, "Behold, I make all things new. Former things are passed away." Whenever anything new comes into history, it brings with it new challenges and new opportunities. And I would like to deal with the challenges that we face today as a result of this triple revolution that is taking place in the world today. First, we are challenged to develop a world perspective. No individual can live alone, no nation can live alone, and anyone who feels that he can live alone is sleeping through a revolution. The world in which we live is geographically one. The challenge that we face today is to make it one in terms of brotherhood. And King goes on to bring that analogy of how we can dwarf distance and place time in chains. He's spoken often about how you can have breakfast in New York and dinner in London, but somehow we can't bridge the gap between our human personalities. He asks for an ethical commitment to make of the world a brotherhood. An ethical commitment. We must all learn to live together as brothers, or we will perish as fools. King himself gave the credit of that quote to John F. Kennedy. Another one gone too soon for his visionary work. Shot down. We are tied together in the single garment of destiny, caught in an inescapable network of mutuality. We are tied together in the single garment of destiny, caught in an inescapable network of mutuality. And whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. For some strange reason, I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. Any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind. Therefore, never sin to know for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. And that's John Donne. You know, we must see this, and we must believe this and live by it. None of us are free until all of us are free. We are chained by the liability of what our privilege demands. How about that? I just made that one up. You can use it. We are chained by the liability that our privilege demands. Everything that we have, it comes at the cost of someone else, so we can at least be conscious of how we get it. King goes on. The hour has come for everybody, for all institutions of the public sector and the private sector, to work to get rid of racism. And now, if we are to do it, we must honestly admit certain things and get rid of certain myths that have constantly been disseminated all over our nation. One is the myth of time. It is the notion that only time can solve the problem of racial injustice. And there are those who often sincerely say to the Negro and his allies in the white community, "Why don't you slow up? Stop pushing things so fast. Only time can solve the problem. And if you will just be nice and patient and continue to pray, in 100 or 200 years, the problem will work itself out." There is an answer to that myth. It is that time is neutral. It can be used either constructively or destructively. And I am sorry to say this morning that I am absolutely convinced that the forces of ill will in our nation, the extreme rightists of our nation, the people on the wrong side, have used time much more effectively than the forces of goodwill. And it may well be that we will have to repent in this generation, not merely for the vitriolic words and the violent actions of the bad people, but for the appalling silence and indifference of the good people who sit around and say, "Wait on time." Somewhere we must come to see that human progress never rolls in on the wheels of inevitability. It comes through the tireless efforts and the persistent work of dedicated individuals who are willing to be co-workers with God. And without this hard work, time itself becomes an ally of the primitive forces of social stagnation. We must help time and realize that the time is always ripe to do right. The time is always ripe to do right. That's words from Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Remaining awake through a great revolution. I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me and we're doing the book club. Wrapping up A Knock at Midnight. Whew. During this election season, I see people really rallying around rhetoric and symbols Cult of Personality, Famous Individuals, The Bling, The Glitz, The Rhetoric. And I hear some people say, what have you done for me lately? And I'm not here to pick on one of the front-running candidates. I'm here to pick on all of them. No, I'm just kidding, because there's only two. But it's a valid question, you know? What have we done? What are we doing? What are we doing? And I'm just asking you who can hear me. What are we doing? Where are you going? Are you voting against something or for something? Think about that. I don't know what we're doing as a collective, honestly. I just want us to be awake as we go through the motions here and we don't fall for the things we've been falling for since TV came out. You guys, we've been falling for the shiny things for way too long. And I'm telling you that as a person involved in media. I love the banging tracks. I love a little nice outfit and a nice get hype man or woman or person. But I know what's theater. And so when we say the time is ripe to always do right, we have to ask our candidates, what have you done up to now when you had this amount of time to do things? And I agree completely with King. I'm sorry. You know, 100%, wholeheartedly. The reason he's not with us anymore is because he called too many people out with truth. He called too many people out. He called out the church. He called out the government. He called out white people. He called out black people. And he upset a lot of people. And so when he's talking about good people who sit around and say, wait on time, the good blue people, we supposed to keep on waiting and not take a risk, not do something different, not fight. And there are some fighters out there, you know. I love my Auntie Maxine, y'all know. There's some fighters out there. But also, they rally around dogma and a flag. And a lot of people are left to the side. Like Quicksilver Messenger Service asked a question. What about the rest of us as they play their political games? King goes on to say on page 210, there is another myth that still gets around. It is a kind of over-reliance on the bootstrap philosophy. Okay? The bootstrap philosophy. And before we get into the poor, I want to talk about racism just a little bit more. As we are going into the American Civil Rights Movement and the struggle of black and brown people in this country, I want to talk a little bit extra about the racism that Americans project onto other people in other countries or other cultures. It's terribly offensive and nationalistic, okay? We've just decided. Our religious government has just decided that an entire group of brown people who worship a certain way are terrorists and criminals. Do you ever think about that? Do you ever think about how it's illegal to wear a hijab in France or other countries, and in America, you can get killed in certain places where somebody gets upset and freaked out and goes in and starts shooting up a mosque, or, you know, where you pray, where you go to get groceries, because they are freaked out that you're a terrorist because of something that somebody told them. That's xenophobia and racism. Is an Arab person, and I don't understand what they're doing over there is devil worship, and I'm going to kill them to save America. This stuff that I'm reading from is not old, and it doesn't just have to do with black people and white people in America. It has to do with the way that we project our norms and our values and what we find safe and beautiful. How we're afraid of that. We're taught to be that because we're not what, class? Awake. Talking about the bootstrap philosophy. King puts this in the perspective of mainly the American Negro. And I'm going to read it as it's written. But we know that it doesn't just apply to Black people in this country. We're just going to go forward. There are those who still feel as if the Negro is to rise out of poverty, if the Negro is to rise out of the slum conditions, if he is to rise out of discrimination and segregation, he must do it all by himself. And so they say, the Negro must lift himself by his own bootstraps. I'm going to talk about the poor here and how we have a general bootstraps philosophy for anyone who seems to be down and out. Little Green Trash Mouth talked on her show yesterday about fascism and opened with these points about moving the poor. It's a big signifier when we're talking about keeping a desirable, what some people think is a desirable community, and what to do with people who aren't participating in the capitalist structure in the way that we feel like they should be participating. Okay, so we talked about the meeting in Santa Fe on Wednesday, city council meeting, where hundreds of people came out to voice their opinions about what should happen with Pete's Place, the shelter there. There were so many people who want the homeless removed from their sight. They don't care where they go. They're just not in my backyard. And I've come out last week and the past couple of weeks. I'm like, what are we supposed to do with these people? Where do you think they're going to go if they're not in there? I don't care. Just not here. That's a bootstraps mentality. When you're looking at people who need and we're telling them, I don't know, help yourself, that's bootstraps. So when we move people from our site, we can put them in, you know, it pains me to think about the options. I'm not going to imagine that world right now. I'm going to urge us to imagine what we're going to say the next time we're confronted with someone who does civic work. The next time we're talking to a friend or a neighbor who is giving the poor a hard time. I mean, we're going to talk about how to respond to some of the things that are, I think, cruel hearts and minds out here right now. Unawake, unenlightened hearts and minds. We can do the work by saying, you know, we have to provide systems of care for the people who are struggling. Otherwise, we're going to continue along with this, you're adding to my numbers as you shoot my people down. If we don't change the structures that are in place right now, we're all going to wind up in a real bad situation. You think you're safe today, but you know you feel the squeeze. So what if we took some of these resources that we're squandering on militarization and we, start paying social workers and community health providers a proper salary, and we hire more of them so that the workload can be manageable, the caseload can be manageable, so that people can get the proper care and attention that they need and some mental health. I mean, why is it so hard to understand? We have created, through endless war, such a mindset of fear in our society that we feel like we need to protect ourselves from everybody and everything, and we're creating more danger. That wheel is going down that road. And it does matter how we talk about people. It does matter. You know, so many people are like, well, what can I do? Just think about how you talk about people, and if you feel the urge to call a unhoused person a pariah or a zombie or a piece of trash, just don't say it. Just don't even open your mouth. Keep it inside until you can transform that thought. Because when we say things like that at the council meetings, when we call people cockroaches and things, and I know it wasn't that much rhetoric, but that's enough to like empower somebody else to do it. And that's what's wrong with a lot of these politicians out here, is the stuff that they say, it empowers other people to be ignorant and take the streets with ignorance. And it doesn't take very many people out there to make us all have a hard day. So when we're looking at not just the right side of the aisle, but the left side of the aisle flinging more than muck, we out in the country, so y'all know all the stuff that can gather in the low spot of your barnyard. Yeah, they're flinging that kind of stuff at each other, and it's spraying on us, you know? So if you believe that time, we need more time, then think now about and build now about what you want to do 4 years from now or 2 years from now when it's time to vote again. If you need more time, use this time wisely. Go and cast your little vote and your little norm from your place of fear and tradition, right? Do what your parents always did. Go ahead and vote that way. But I want you to take some time and think about what you can do in the next 2 and 4 years to build alternative systems with people in your community so that maybe we'll have some different options next time, okay? That's what I'm trying to do anyway. King says on page 216, this is America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. The question is whether America will do it. There is nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. The real question is, do we have the will? Do you? It's only a question you can answer for yourself. I asked a lot of questions here last week about why the poor scare people so much. It's just some questions. King goes on to talk about the Poor People's March and them wanting to come to Washington on the Poor People's Campaign. We are going to bring the tired, the poor, the huddled masses. We are going to bring those who have long years of hurt and neglect. We are going to bring those who have come to feel that life is a long and desolate corridor with no exit signs. We are going to bring children and adults and old people who have never seen a doctor or a dentist in their lives. We are not coming to engage in any histrionic gesture. We are not coming to tear up Washington. We are coming to demand that the government address itself to the problem of poverty. Who's going to lead this? I felt like Cori Bush was trying to do something and she didn't win her seat back. I just wonder where the leaders from the communities that are like Dr. King, who aren't kowtowing to platitudes. And maybe it's the fact that we don't have the same kind of governmental leaders that we've had before either. You know, when I think about presidents like Kennedy, I feel like there was more work going on with those actual politicians. Now I feel like these politicians are like, a lot of them are just puppets. They just come in, they take a seat, they cash some checks, they make some deals, and then they just do that for a lot of years. They like make a whole career out of it. And there's no real fight. It's just, we're going to keep this capitalist machine going till the wheels fall off. You know, I don't feel like anybody believes in anything except the white supremacists and people who believe in that. It's of all races who play to white supremacist patriarchy colonization. They're the only people who believe in anything. And it's sad because I feel like they believe that what they believe in, because that's how they got here and were able to get a toehold in here, is through violence and oppression and enslavement. So that's worked, you know. They've been able to do that, and that's not a long reach into history. And people who are telling the rest of us about equity and justice and livable wages and interdependence, that these things aren't real and that we can't achieve them. And so I feel like a lot of people don't believe in them because there haven't been these stories passed down from our immediate generations that we were actually able to accomplish it. Now, these are just things I'm working out on the air with you right now. I think about these things a lot, and I really wonder why it is that people don't seem to believe in justice, but they can really be able to manifest war and terror. I've seen it, though. We've seen it. You know, we've made great strides forward. Things are definitely better than they were for my parents and grandparents, but worse in so many other ways. Dr. King says, "And I submit that nothing will be done until people of goodwill put their bodies and their souls in motion. And it will be the kind of soul force brought into being as a result of this confrontation that I believe will make the difference. Yes, it will be a poor people's campaign. This is the question facing America. Ultimately, a great nation is a compassionate nation." Beautiful thing. A great nation is a compassionate nation. There's quite a bit more left in this sermon. I'll read a couple of more lines. And this is important. This is something that I'm going to call out. I'm going to call out Kamala Harris real quick. I don't need to talk about Trump because we all know that. Okay. But what I want to talk about are the wolves in sheep's clothing that people don't seem to be able to recognize because your eyes are closed. We count sheep. We're asleep, right? There's a passage here. And King is talking about ending war. The war that he's talking about is the Vietnam War. I remember so well when I first took a stand against the war in Vietnam. The critics took me on and they had their say in the most negative and sometimes most vicious way. One day a newsman came to me and said, "Dr. King, don't you think you're going to have to stop now opposing the war and move more in line with the administration's policy? As I understand it, it has hurt the budget of your organization, and people who once respected you have lost respect for you. Don't you feel that you've really got to change your position?" I looked at him and I had to say, "Sir, I'm sorry, you don't know me. I am not a consensus leader. I did not determine what is right and wrong by looking at the budget of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. I've not taken a sort of Gallup poll of the majority opinion. Ultimately, a genuine leader is not a searcher for consensus, but a molder of consensus. On some positions, cowardice asks the question, is it expedient? And then expedience comes along and asks the question, is it politic? Vanity asks the question, is it popular? Conscience asks the question, is it right? There comes a time when one must take the position that is neither safe, nor politic, nor popular, but he must do it because conscience tells him it is right. I believe today that there is a need for all people of goodwill to come with a massive act of conscience and say in the words of the old Negro spiritual, we ain't gonna study war no more. This is the challenge facing modern man. Let me close by saying that we have difficult days ahead in the struggle for justice and peace, but I will not yield to a politic of despair. I'm going to maintain hope as we come to Washington in this campaign. The cards are stacked against us. This time, we will really confront a Goliath. God grant that we will be that David of truth set out against the Goliath of injustice, the Goliath of neglect, the Goliath of refusing to deal with the problems and go on with the determination to make America the truly great America it is called to be. I say to you that our goal is freedom, and I believe we are going to get there because however much she strays away from it, the goal of America is freedom. Abused and scorned though we may be as a people, our destiny is tied up with the destiny of America. We shall overcome because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. Remaining awake through a great revolution, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I'm Dream Queen. This collection of sermons was edited by Claiborne Carson and Peter Hollerin. I don't know what we're going to do next in the book club. There's going to be something. I don't know when. It's going to be sometime. And I hope that you stay here with us.